6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The U.S. Wednesday said it's prepared to use force to stop North Korea's nuclear and missile programs, although U.S. UN Ambassador Nikki Haley told the Security Council it prefers a diplomatic solution. Her comments followed Tuesday's test of an intercontinental ballistic missile that some experts said could reach U.S. territory.
Their actions are quickly closing off the possibility of a diplomatic solution. The United States is prepared to use the full range of our capabilities to defend ourselves and our allies. One of our capabilities lies with our considerable military forces. We will use them if we must, but we prefer not to have to go in that direction.
Haley said the U.S. would propose new U.N. sanctions, perhaps including a cutoff of major sources of hard currency, restricting the flow of oil, and an increase in air and maritime restrictions. Senior fellow with the Washington-based International Institute for Strategic Studies, Michael Elliman, said North Korean leader Kim Jong-un did not test a missile that threatens the entire U.S., which may suggest two things.
One, they don't have the capacity to test a missile that could reach the continental United States. But two, he may be worried that testing something that could reach, say, Kansas City would be a red line that he has crossed.
Meanwhile, the U.S. Defense Department says it has confidence in its ability to defend against a limited North Korean threat. Zambian President Edgar Lungu said he intends to seek Parliament's approval to impose a state of emergency following a series of arson attacks, including one that partially destroyed the main market in the capital, Lusaka. Political tensions in the southern African country have risen since the arrest on treason charges of main opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema. This is VOA News. The four Arab countries that cut ties with Qatar on Wednesday expressed disappointment at what they call Doha's negative response to their list of demands to stop supporting terrorism. Meeting in Cairo, they indicated their month-long boycott of the tiny Gulf nation will continue. Sheikh Khalid bin Ahmed Al Khalifa is Bahrain's foreign minister.
There are a lot of sources of support for terror in the region, but there is a difference between countries that are fighting those terrorists, like our countries, and countries that are harboring them or supporting them.
Qatar, which has denied supporting terrorism, has accused the four of aggression. Those four include Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates, and Egypt. Qatar's foreign minister is Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman Al Thani.
We believe that mainly the main issue is not about terrorism. The main issue is opposing differences and the way to shut the other voice. And maybe they are looking at Qatar that it's punching over its weight.
The four countries, among their demands, want Qatar to close a Turkish base on its soil, shut down the Al Jazeera broadcast network, and distance itself from Iran. Russia, Turkey, and Iran Wednesday failed to agree on de-escalation zones in Syria during peace talks in Kazakhstan. Russia and Iran, which support Syria's President Bashar al-Assad, have agreed to work with Turkey, which backs the rebels, to establish four such zones in the war-torn country. The three hope to reach consensus by the end of August. Meanwhile, U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said Washington is prepared to discuss joint efforts with Russia to stabilize Syria, including establishing no-fly zones. He said the U.S. would also want to discuss the use of ceasefire observers and the joint delivery of humanitarian aid to civilians. Pro-government supporters wielding pipes and wooden sticks Wednesday burst into Venezuela's opposition-controlled National Assembly, attacking lawmakers. Several were injured. Tensions with the government of Socialist President Nicolas Maduro remain high as anti-government protests continue. On an almost daily basis, at least 90 have been killed in protests since early April. A U.S. soldier was killed, two others wounded, in an attack in Afghanistan's southern Helmand province after being hit by a mortar shell. The Pentagon said the soldiers were part of Afghan military operations against the Taliban. Nearly 80 people were killed and dozens injured when a truck crashed in Central African Republic. Tuesday's accident occurred about 10 kilometers outside of the town of Bambari. The medical condition of the U.S. congressman shot and wounded last month has worsened. Steve Scalise, number 3 Republican in the House of Representatives, has developed an infection and has been taken into intensive care at the MedStar Washington Hospital. His condition is listed as serious. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Zambian President Edgar Lungu threatens to impose a state of emergency.
My government has decided to invoke Article 31 of the Republican Constitution, which guides how a nation should deal with an existing situation which, if allowed to continue, may lead to a state of public emergency.
That's Zambian President Edgar Lungu. Presidential spokesman Amos Chanda will explain exactly what the president means. Zambia's opposition UPND says it is not surprised by President Lungu's action. Angolan President Eduardo dos Santos has returned to Spain for a private visit, but his choice of acting president is raising concerns. And the UN says Africa's booming tourist industry is boosting the continent's economies.
Also importantly documented in this report is the fact that intra-African tourism is 12 months a year. It does not wait for the northern winter. And that way it underpins more continuing livelihoods than the seasonal tourism.
Mukisha Kituyi, Secretary General of the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development. And we'll examine the status of Central African Republic Special Criminal Court. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zambian President Edgar Lungu has threatened to declare a state of emergency by invoking Article 31 of the country's constitution. In a speech to the nation Wednesday evening, Mr. Lungu said the peace and tranquility Zambia has enjoyed since independence 53 years ago is slowly being eroded because of what he called a few unpatriotic citizens who have decided to involve themselves in criminal activities, thereby endangering the lives and properties of citizens. Zambia has seen political unrest recently, particularly since the country's August 2016 election, which results opposition leader Hakainde Hichilema has refused to recognize. There has also been a spate of unexplained fires and vandalism, including the fire that gutted the Lusaka city market on Tuesday this week. The president said he was invoking Article 31 because he believes the intention of what he calls these irresponsible actions is to make the country ungovernable.
Fellow countrymen and women, as government, you, the people, have given us the mandate to preside over the affairs of the nation. Therefore, it is our duty to ensure that each and every person in this country enjoys the freedom and protection as enshrined in our constitution. Following these sad events, my government has decided to invoke Article 31 of the Republican Constitution, which guides how a nation should deal with an existing situation which, if allowed to continue, may lead to a state of public emergency. There is no doubt in my mind that the intentions of these perpetrators of these irresponsible actions is to make the country ungovernable. And as president of this nation, it is my responsibility to respond accordingly, to forestall their planned chaos, and I will therefore not tolerate this lawlessness. This proclamation will be tabled in the National Assembly in line with Article 31, sub-Article 2 of our Constitution for approval by the National Assembly. It is my sincere hope that the members of Parliament will rise to the occasion.
That's Zambian President Edgar Lungu speaking to the nation on Wednesday. A spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu says the president's invocation of Article 31 of the Constitution is not a declaration of a state of emergency. Instead, Amos Chanda says President Lungu invoked a law called Preservation of Public Security Act, which he said deals with a situation which, if left unchecked, could lead to a state of public emergency.
There is no state of emergency. That's the first thing. What has been proclaimed is a situation which, if left unchecked, could lead to a state of public emergency. The president has issued a proclamation under Article 31 of the Constitution, which provides for the president to determine whether a situation exists which, if left unchecked, would lead to a state of public emergency. Under that proclamation, the law that is being invoked is the Preservation of Public Security Act. Under a state of emergency, the law that is proclaimed is the Emergency Powers Act. Under the current situation as of today, we are invoking the provisions of the law called Preservation of Public Security Act. It deals with a situation which, if left unchecked, would lead to a state of public emergency. It is Article 31 of the Constitution that empowers the president to do so. If he has to declare a state of emergency, he has to rely on Article 30 of the Constitution. And if that is the case, then there is a reporting mechanism that requires us to inform international organizations, international covenant on human rights in line with those international conventions that we have signed. And that is not a situation as of today.
So he's threatening a state of emergency?
He's not threatening the state of emergency. He has invoked one step below a state of emergency. Simply put, the president has given police more powers to stop and search and detain people longer than normal.
What some Zambians are saying is that the government should be the one behaving like a mature person. Instead of frightening the country, the government should be doing everything to assure the people. Some people are suggesting perhaps the government has failed now to be running the country, so it has to resort to this.
The government is behaving as a mature government. Because when recklessness, lawlessness, criminal behavior threatens the livelihoods of people, threatens to bring down power installations, pain markets where the livelihoods of thousands of traders, which translates in millions of people, and they are living there, it would be an irresponsible government that would allow a situation to degenerate into a state of public emergency. So the situation that has been declared today, only a criminal would complain about it. Nightclubs will continue running. There's no curfew. There's nothing of that sort. Only those who are carrying petrol bombs in their pockets will be afraid of what has happened today.
If this is not a state of emergency, what are some of the measures that will be applied under this particular order?
It is not a state of emergency, but it increases the powers of the police to act more decisively, to act faster in order to forestall any further lawlessness. For instance, where they will detain you and ensure that you appear before court no later than 48 hours since your detention. You might be detained longer than that, probably 7 days, probably 3 days, probably 10 days. So that's what it means.
Let me go to this question that some members of the opposition we have spoken with have raised, and that is this plays into the hand of the argument made, and that is that since President Edgar Lungu took over, that Zambia is more and more moving towards dictatorship.
There's absolutely no truth in that. If a dictatorship means that stopping you from a burning market, we are just too proud to be that dictatorship. If dictatorship means that the power line that supplies a population of 3 million people in Lusaka must not be under the darkness because of the act of one criminal, if that is dictatorship, we are just too proud to be that dictatorship.
Amos Chanda is spokesman for Zambian President Edgar Lungu. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lusaka. Zambia's main opposition United Party for National Development, UPND, says it is not surprised by President Edgar Lungu's decision to invoke Article 31 of the country's constitution. Douglas Yakalima is a UPND member of parliament and senior advisor to jail UPND leader Hakainde Hichilema. He says the UPND knew all along that Zambia, under President Lungu, was slowly headed towards a dictatorship.
We knew this was coming because they've been planning to do all this. After the fire which happened at the Lusaka City Market, it became a pretext in order to declare a state of emergency, in order to become more high-handed So Egypt has always said that no one should actually do certain things that can bring bloodshed in the country. So, but these guys have been so high-handed, the world has wanted actually this to happen. I think this was a pre-planned thing in order for them now to cramp on several of the rights of individuals, and including especially our own members and ourselves. So we knew that this is what they were planning.
The president, in his speech, said that the primary responsibility of his government is to protect life and property. You mentioned the fire at the market. Also, since the elections, it appears, according to the government, that the opposition, the UPND particularly, has resorted to actions aimed at destabilizing the government.
Well, what I can tell you is that if HHC had thought that way, I mean, in all African elections, wherever it has been felt that an African election has been stolen, there has been bloodshed, okay? You talk about Kenya in 2007, 2008, literally everywhere. HHC has said no to that. And there's no way today HHC chose a path to go to the Constitutional Court, which is allowed in our statutes. But if you think that the election was not free and fair, you go there, and your constitution allows you to do that. So there's no way, and I can tell you, Edgar Lungu and his friends, they've always been saying that, why shouldn't the HH not recognize me? Okay? So even his incarceration has not been like a treason or whatever. That's nonsense, that I can tell you. The reason why we went to court is because we believe in the rule of law, and we are still in court even now. So there is no way to say that us as UPND, we've been making all these things in order to destabilize the country. No.
I spoke to presidential spokesman Amos Chanda. He indicated that the fire at the big market was an act perhaps committed by people sympathetic to the UPND. I want to give you a chance to respond to that.
It is not true. If you check what happened, the Inspector General himself yesterday, after the gutting of the watch, he said he wanted to get to the bottom of that. He also indicated that throughout the night, the police were actually patrolling the market. And the PF youth chairperson, who also got with the police, indicated that the police, when they left around 05 hours, they opened themselves. The police opened with the PF. This guy admitted to say that they had opened the market. That was the PF guy with the police. The police left at about 05 hours. And then Lusaka City Council entered to clean the market. So the blame game here must not be there, because they wanted to have an excuse of declaring a state of emergency. But I can tell you, it will backfire in their faces, and it has already backfired in their faces. So Amos Chanda is telling lies. And this is a tragedy of the Africans, the way they behave. Unfortunately enough, I have to say that I'm an African, but unfortunately enough, in our continent, the behavior is just wrong. That I can tell you.
Before I let you go, was Mr. Hichilema in court today, and what was the reason?
He was in court today because he had sued Amos Chanda himself over contempt of court. And the DPP took over, not even taking over the case. The DPP just said that they had entered a notice pro se quo, that he was going to be free, and yet it was a private prosecution. But that we leave it to the lawyers. I'm not confident enough. But I can tell you to say that the rule of law in this country is a mess. No independence of the judiciary, no independence of the legislature, and everything has been the executive controlling all the wings of government, unfortunately enough for our country.
Douglas Siakalima is a UPND Member of Parliament and Senior Advisor to Jail UPND Leader Hakainde Hichilema. He was speaking with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, July 6th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. A new report finds flourishing tourism in Africa is putting millions of people to work and adding billions of dollars to national economies. The UN Conference on Trade and Development's annual Economic Development in Africa report projects continued robust growth in tourism in the coming years. Lisa Schlein reports from the launch of the report in Geneva.
Growth figures in Africa's tourism sector are impressive. The World Travel and Tourism Council projects the total contribution of tourism to Africa's gross domestic product will amount to $296 billion by 2026. This is a phenomenal increase, considering that tourism's direct contribution to Africa's GDP was $30 billion between 1995 and 1998. The Tourism Council also expects the sector to generate nearly 29 million jobs in 2026, up from 21 million in 2016. UNCTAD Secretary General Mukhisa Kituyi says intra-African tourism, which now exceeds visitors from Europe, the United States, and Asia, is behind the fast growth in the industry.
Also importantly documented in this report is the fact that intra-African tourism is 12 months a year. It does not wait for the northern winter. And that way it underpins more continuing livelihoods than the seasonal tourism associated with traditional forms of source markets.
But Kituyi says African governments must liberalize air transport to realize the potential of intra-regional tourism for the continent's economic growth. Currently, he says, four countries, South Africa, Egypt, Ethiopia, and Kenya, account for more than 90% of air traffic.
Now, many countries which don't have a viable national airline don't see the reason of giving concession to low-cost landing when there is no such benefit for their own airlines. And what it means is that you start finding abnormally high landing costs for airlines from other African countries.
Kituyi says this short-sighted policy results in abnormally high costs for intra-African flying. This, he says, holds back greater potential revenue through the greater movement of persons across the continent. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
A report out this week by Human Rights Watch highlights the importance and challenges of Central African Republic Special Criminal Court, known as the SCC. The unique and new hybrid national court is tasked with investigating and prosecuting human rights violations and war crimes that have been committed in the country since 2003. Human Rights Watch Africa researcher Louis March talked to Ricky Stryak about the status of the court and how it could start investigations, possibly as early as 2018.
So the court has made a lot of progress this year, and they've appointed an international special prosecutor in February, and they appointed a national deputy prosecutor in May. And just this week, national judges were sworn into the court. So it's been making great progress. I mean, it doesn't have a fixed timeline to begin work. It's supposed to begin work as soon as possible. And, you know, for an institution that was written into law in 2015, things have certainly taken a long time. But the good news is that things definitely are picking up and moving. There's still some technical aspects that the national government needs to finalize on, but this should be done in the next few months. So it's reasonable. It's optimistic, but at the same time reasonable to think that the court can actually start investigations by 2018.
What are the court's main hurdles? Is it funding? Is it a lack of human resources?
So the investigators are going to be both international and national, and the court has a number of different hurdles. It has hurdles in getting appropriate national and international staff. Any international staff is going to have to be French-speaking, will have to be schooled in civil law. The bigger challenge for the court is going to be sustaining long-term international support. I mean, the Central African government is pretty much broke, and they're really reliant on international donors. And, you know, there is donor fatigue in this country. This is a country where people have not seen a very good return on investment. And so while the court's budget is really modest, it only runs, you know, around $5 million U.S. dollars a year, it's been difficult to get donors to commit to a long-term sustained funding structure. So, you know, we're certainly trying to convince international partners of the Central African Republic that any investment made in development and any investment made in peace will also have to have likewise investments made in the judicial sector, because if they don't, then that money that they're putting in peace initiatives or in development is very short term and could.
What is the current status of the latest ceasefire?
Yes. So the June 19th Rome peace plan, it's, well, within 12 hours, fighting broke out in Berea. between one Seleka faction, the FPRC, and between an Antitalaka group. Since then, there's been fighting in Kagabandoro between the MPC and peacekeepers, which took place around a displacement camp. And as we speak right now, violence is spreading to the southeast of Zemio, which is a town that used to be afforded protection by the presence of American and Ugandan international peacekeepers who were there on the Tantor LRA mission, but have since pulled out. But it seems to be having a difficult time seeking traction.
That was Louis March, an Africa researcher at Human Rights Watch. He was speaking to Ricky Stryer from Rwanda. Angolan President Eduardo dos Santos early this week returned to Barcelona, Spain, this time for what officials call a private visit. The 74-year-old leader spent several weeks in Spain this year for medical treatment. After leading his country for 38 years, he has decided not to seek re-election in this year's election. Back in Luanda, Mr. Dos Santos's appointment of Intelligence Chief General Helder Vieira Diaz to serve as acting president instead of Vice President Manuel Vicente is drawing eyebrow. Here's veteran journalist Mario Alpaivai.
The important thing is, the question is, he was appointed by President Dos Santos to substitute the deputy president, Mr. Manuel Vicente. As you are aware, President Dos Santos, just after a couple of weeks in Angola, came back to Barcelona, Spain, due to the health conditions. But the problem is, and that's the question raised by the opposition party UNITA, which leader says this is against the constitution, is according to the constitution, after the president, in the writing of the constitution, is the deputy president. And after the deputy president, is the president of the National Assembly. So the opposition leaders, Mr. Isaías Samacu from UNITA, are saying that, first, this is illegal because General Helder Vieira Diaz Copelipa is not the one, according to the constitution, according to the law, which must substitute the deputy president. If is the case, the deputy president is not in conditions to run the country due to the absence of the president. And in this sense, the opposition leader, Mr. Isaías Samacuva, are saying this is some kind of a coup d'etat because this is not according to the law. And the problem in political terms, not only in legal terms, is that you raise the question about who really runs the country when the president is not in the country. This raises the questions about the contradictions and the increase of tension inside the ranks of the ruling party, with several personalities fighting for the power in the era of post-Eduardo dos Santos time.
President dos Santos is in Spain for some, I don't know, whether for medical reason or for some reason. Now, instead of the vice president, who is supposed to act
yes.
when the president is not in the country, is supposed to be the vice president. Is that correct?
Is that correct? Yes.
So now, who is acting when the president is out of the country?
The president appointed the head of the military house, General Helder Vieira Diaz Copelipa, instead of the vice president, which with not a quite clear official reason, is not in conditions to run the country. And that's the question which has been arising by the opposition parties, saying that this is illegal. Because even when the vice president is not in conditions to run the country, according to the constitution, the next stage, it will be the president of the National Assembly.
Mario Alpaivai is a veteran Angolan journalist. He was speaking with me from the capital, Luanda. That's it for this Thursday, July 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Button, Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.